Ladies and gentlemen, all rise.
Sit. I am David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, and possibly in a career-ending move, your judge for the day.
For the last 10,000 years, give or take, since humankind first started domesticating pets, people, for one reason or another, have been arguing about which is better, cats or dogs. A global question. We decided to settle this debate once and for all live on stage at the New Yorker Festival with a panel of highly distinguished experts on each side. That's coming up on the New Yorker Radio Hour. We'll also hear a conversation with the late Zaha Hadid, the first woman to win architecture's highest award. And Lauren Collins talks with Damian Lewis, who played an impossibly elegant terrorist on Homeland and now plays an impossibly elegant hedge fund guy on Billions. That's all ahead today. But first, cats and dogs.
Now listen, I don't have a dog or a cat in this fight. I have to admit that domestic animals and me, we don't get along all that well. So I am the ideal person to have a certain kind of dispassionate judgment in this case. But you are the jury. You, the audience, will decide the verdict. So let's get started. Opening for the team dogs is defense counsel, Mr. Adam Gopnik.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, opposing counsel. I stand before this audience in whose hands the verdict will be decided tonight, not in any sense as an enemy of the cat or all the things that it represents. If I were inclined to do that, I might point out that without cats, my good friend, Andrew Lloyd Webber would have no career. We could compile a list of such offenses that we would hold cats liable for, but we are not going to do that. Not tonight. All we have on our side, ladies and gentlemen, is simple truth. The truth of the dog will be presented to you tonight in contradiction to what I can only call, with affection and esteem, the cult of the cat. And I use the word cult, my friends, very advisedly. For what is a cult, after all, Mr. Lane? A cult is simply an occasion when a group of otherwise intelligent people invest an object with emotions and intellectual powers that it possesses only through their projection of them into that creature. And in it, the cultists always insist that they can see signs of extraordinary powers to which all rational people are blind. On the other hand, we have the dog. We have the evolutionary miracle
order
of the dog.
Thank you.
We go back to the cave of Chauvet 50,000 years ago when Neolithic man was just beginning to scrawl on the sides of the cave. And what do we find there? We find the track of only one animal, the track of a dog walking across the floor of the cave in perfect unison with a small child who must be his master. Think about that, that the dog was the first animal to willfully break the circle of the campfire, to enter into codependence with man. We will show you how dogs can tend, how dogs can shepherd, how dogs can hunt, how dogs can care. We will show you dogs helping blind people across the street. I would challenge you, my good friend, Mr. Lane, to show us a single cat who has ever helped the blind across the street. But we will show you, I think, more than that. We will show, for instance, that all dogs are Democrats and all cats are Republicans. And if you think about it, it's necessarily true. Dogs are social animals par excellence. They are exemplars of loyalty, engagement. It is the cat who removes himself from society, who pretends that others do not exist and need not be cared for. The cat is Republican in every imaginable way, and it is the sociable dog who is the true Democrat. So the choice before you tonight will not merely be the choice between the cult of the cat and the enduring truth of the dog, but also, and remember this when you vote, between your deepest political and ethnic allegiances, which we will ask you to express. I turn the lectern over to my good friend, the attorney for the cat.
Mr. Lane.
Your Serene Majesty of ultimate power and oneness. Dog people. it's wonderful that you've all felt that you could come here tonight to fulfill your civic duty as a jury. I live in a household which has cats and dogs, fine examples of each. And to be fair, living with them all has increased my affection for and appreciation of the dog. What a piece of work is a dog. How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty. How an action like an angel, how an appreciation like a dog. I come down in the morning. The two dogs greet me not with good day, master, or how nice to see you again after a break of 7.5 hours, but as if I were a gravely wounded and richly decorated soldier returning from the First World War. And meanwhile, the cat is sitting up there on the windowsill going... If we're going to understand cats this evening, and I have absolutely no doubt that we're not going to, the way to imagine a cat is at every point it is smoking an invisible, filterless, white French cigarette. Everything that we love and admire about a dog is bad education for the soul. The way that they reward everything you could possibly ever want. The way they tell us that every day is going to be great. Every day is going to be the best day you've ever had in your life. Every day you're going to jump for joy. That your friends are always there for you, like Rachel and Ross, you know, full of brimming with interesting smells. If you are a serious, perceptive person, if you are someone who lives in the world and know what it consists of, you know that that's wrong, okay? And essentially what a dog is asking you to do, in complete distinction to what Adam said, is to live a lie. Because there are sometimes those days when you just want to be alone, okay? Not because you're aloof and Republican, but maybe just because you feel like being alone. Then look to the cat. If cleanliness is next to godliness, and both rank just below tuna, welcome to my template. All I'm asking, really, is that you live in truth, because truth is cats. Cats is truth. That's all you know on Earth and all you need to know, apart from the fact that the inside of a vole is, if anything, even more interesting than the outside. The naming of cats is a difficult matter, but the voting for cats is very simple indeed. You know what to do.
The next speaker is from the dog side, Malcolm Gladwell, who's the author of 4 New York Times super-selling books, I would say, including What the Dog Saw and Other Adventures, which contains his profile of the dog whisperer, Cesar Millan. Mr. Gladwell.
Thank you. Judge, members of the jury, I think it is really up to me in debates like this to really see the big picture. To raise the questions I think, frankly, very few of us, very particularly members of the cat side of Team Cat, have either the imagination or, frankly, the courage to bring up, which is that this whole debate has massive national security implications. Allow me to explain with a story from my own experience. Not long ago, I was on an American Airlines flight from Miami to New York, and there was a bomb scare. And the pilot pulled the plane to the very edge of the airport, and the baggage handlers came, and they unloaded every piece of luggage on the plane and put it in a long row up and down the tarmac, 200 yards long, and brought out an absolutely adorable German Shepherd with his handler. And the German Shepherd started at one end, tail wagging furiously, and sniffed each bag up and down in one long, furious gallop, all the while projecting an air of absolute purpose and happiness. And thus, clear of danger, we resumed our journey. Now, allow me to make the absolutely obvious, but nonetheless so often overlooked, observation. No cat would do that. Now, why are cats so resolutely indifferent to pulling their weight in the war against terror? One answer might be the cat is ill-equipped to handle the task of bomb sniffing. That's nonsense. You know as well as I do that their noses are certainly up to the task. Another standard response might be, well, the cat is somehow indifferent to the threat that explosive materials pose to life. And we could put that to rest so easily merely by popping a balloon next to the ear of a sleeping cat. Observe his reaction. He is absolutely aware of the threat explosive materials pose to life. So what's the answer? Well, I think it's staring us in the face. The cat does not sniff for bombs because the cat doesn't want to sniff for bombs. Now, why? I think the answer lies in the famous distinction that has been brought to bear by the psychologist Carol Dweck, who in some of her seminal work over the last 10 years has argued that human beings can be divided into one of two groups, those with what she calls a fixed mindset and those with what she calls an effort mindset. The person with the fixed mindset, according to Dweck, has a notion that their abilities are innate. People with an effort mindset, on the other hand, think of their abilities as fluid, as things that can be enhanced by effort and practice. I think you can see where I'm going with this. Dogs have an effort mindset. Cats have a fixed mindset. The cat does not sniff for bombs because if he misses one, he greatly fears that he has put his entire essence, his very cattiness, at risk. The dog has no such anxiety, right? He says to himself as he propels himself down the runway, filled with happiness and purpose, that it is better to have sniffed and missed than never to have sniffed at all. Think about that. Think about that when Team Cat goes on and on, as they surely will, about how cute cats are. And when they show you a cute picture, remind yourself how many lives have been needlessly put at risk because of the cat's excessive self-regard. We are engaged in a life or death struggle in the West, and the cat is sleeping on the sidelines.
Aria Levy is a staff writer for the magazine, and her article, Living Room Leopards, appeared almost against my will in both the magazine and the Big New Yorker Book of Cats. I kid, it was a marvelous piece. Aria Levy.
Malcolm, you want to talk about the truth? Paolo came into my life as a bit of very large baggage with my last relationship. A decade ago, Paolo and his owner moved into my one-bedroom apartment, and immediately, the cat and I recognized each other for what we were: natural enemies. From my perspective, an enormous gray monster was now taking up space in my tiny apartment, shedding, sh-ing, and shredding the furniture. For his part, Paolo understood that it was my fault that he was now stuck in a sealed box in the sky, and he loathed me for this. He expressed his feelings by hissing at me and periodically sinking his teeth and/or claws into my flesh. But over the years, something inexplicable happened. That cat grew on me like a fungus. I started getting a kick out of his relentless sourness. I looked forward to seeing his sullen, scornful face when I got home at night. If he made a mess, I cleaned it up. If he destroyed a garment or a chair or, say, an outrageously expensive and beautiful Turkish rug, I shrugged, sadly. He taught me something I was shocked to learn. A certain kind of very deep love has nothing much to do with compatibility. If you spend enough time taking care of another being, you may eventually find yourself powerless to stem the transformation of your resentment into adoration. Living with cats immunizes you against codependence. And for a guy who talks a lot about being Jewish, you don't seem to have gone to too many shrinks, Mr. Gopnik, because codependence is not a good thing. Biologists have been known to call cats commensal domesticates, which means they choose to live with humans, but they retain the ability to revert back to true feral status, unlike other domesticated species. What you glean from the general feline vibe is essential evolutionary truth. Cats can take us or leave us. As Thorsten Veblen put it, the cat lives with man on terms of equality. By contrast, he said, a dog has the gift of unquestioning subservience and a slave's quickness in guessing his master's moods. I say liberty, equality, fraternity, cats.
We are now at the stage of closing statements. We'll first hear from the canine side, Adam Gopnik, and then from the feline, Anthony Lane. Mr. Gopnik.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, members of the CAT team. Thank you, my colleagues. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I think this is the easiest decision you will ever have to make in your lives. Again and again, as we listen to the arguments from Team CAT, what did we hear? Yes, it's true that cats are melancholic and isolated, and sometimes in our most melancholic and isolated and depressive moods, we need the company of a cat. My friend Ari has spoken of the relentless sourness of the cat she was presenting to us as Exhibit A in the case for cats. I don't want to appeal to your shallow or your deep-seated political allegiances in any obvious way, but I do ask you, if the young Margaret Thatcher had been given a dog, this is, and this is not a narrow question of Democrats and Republicans, it crosses oceans. And the question of the cat's association with all that is wrong in the world far transcends Margaret Thatcher. So ask yourselves as you cast this terribly important and deciding vote tonight, if you want to stand with this genus, or if you want to cross over and live alongside those who cherish the dog, JFK, who brought a dog with him into the decision room during the Cuban Missile Crisis, knowing that it would bring a note of geniality and perspective to all of his executive committee. Look in your heart. We ask for your vote tonight for Team Dog. Thank you.
Mr. Lane, for the feline team.
To the dog, life is all, how can we say? It's fidelity, it's kindness and a friendship. To the cat, all is mystery and bewilderment. And it presents us with this beautiful vision of the universe as being, well, the universe is like a cat. It is unknowable, lethal, very beautiful, and beyond our comprehension. It shows us, the cat, that even when you think you've solved a puzzle, it remains a puzzle and, in fact, deepens into a mystery. So what is it that dogs actually do? They delay flights. We know that. They fetch game, which is really, really helpful when you've just shot a brace of partridge in Gramercy Park. Did Tom Jones stand up at Las Vegas and say, "What's new, Poochie Wooch?" No, he didn't. Did T.S. Eliot write a poem called McCavity, the Clarity Dog? I know. Did James Bond have a blonde bisexual girlfriend called Doggy Galore? I don't think so. The cat is both wilder and yet somehow more urbane. It is less domesticated, but it is more civilized. We could have gone with that. And the other thing we could have told you, finally, is that cat people have better sex. And why is that? Firstly, because we are schooled in sensuality. Secondly, because there is not a flatulent Labrador in the middle of the bed. And thirdly, because we are so refined that afterwards we don't go on about the fact that we did it in the kitty position.
Yeah. Anthony.
Long live the cat. Viva la chat! Lange leben die Katze! Viva il gatto! Mao Wai Tsun! Thank you very much!
We have now come to the decisive part of the evening. First, we will hear, in purely applause terms, we will hear from the dog side and then the cat side. And if I need to hear it again, you'll do it again. So, the dog side, who votes in favor of the dogs?
Thank you.
I got the idea. The cat side. Besides Mr. Lane's untoward performance, one more time, dogs. And cats. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, thank you for your extraordinary deliberations. Thank you, both sides. Victory is to the dogs. But joy to all of you.
Anthony Lane, on stage at the New Yorker Festival, along with Adam Gopnik, Malcolm Gladwell, and Ariel Levy. You're listening to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.